city, his house. No one beats him in his house. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now. On the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We are back. The last hour of primetime. McCowan's back tomorrow, Mr. Brunt.
Yeah, I believe that when I see it.
I'll be off.
He's coming back for a Friday?
Yeah, I'll be off to Florida. You'll join me. And
I think he's going to. I can feel the flu coming on for Bob right now.
We'll be doing my show from Florida on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
I will indeed.
Looking forward to that.
Yes, indeed. That'll be fun.
Should be training. Still kind of having a hard time getting depressed about the Marcus Stroman thing. I feel that I should be more depressed than I am.
Well,
about it.
Yeah, well,
I'm still kind of excited.
If it's all over on March the 12th, then
yeah.
I think.
I mean, it's not like it's the Leafs where it's all over on March 12th.
The Leafs are all over on March the 12th. That's correct. I don't think the baseball season's over yet.
You know what else excites me?
What would that be?
That would be that Doug McLean's about to join us. Primetime Sports. Hello, Mr. McLean.
I lucked out, didn't I?
You did. Well, Bob's not here. Your buddy's not here today.
That's what I mean. I got on a day before, day early. Thank God for that.
I think that may be by design, Doug.
So, Doug McLean, Johnny Boychuk gets 7 years and $42 million. I know he's been good for them this year, and clearly those two additions have really kind of solidified that team. But do you like that length? And let's leave aside the money for a minute. Money's money, but do you like the length of the contract?
Well, if you're his agent, you're going in there and saying, okay, here's my number one comparable, and the only comparable we're going to use in this negotiation, and that's Dion Phaneuf.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, what is it, basically a million a year less. I think when you step to the plate and you acquire Boychuk and Letty and you see what they did for your franchise. I mean, albeit John Tavares has been an awful important part of that. You sort of feel, I want to get him done. I have to get him done. He would have gotten that in the free agent market. He would have done that. He would have been in the high fives to low sixes without a doubt. So I don't have a problem with the deal. I really don't. You know, I think it's solidifying their back end, and it allows DeHaan and Hamnick to continue to evolve as young defensemen and not have to be right at the top of their lineup, but can move, you know, either in the 1, 2, 3, 4, anywhere in there because of these two guys. So I like the deal. I do.
They're building something really kind of neat down there right now. Like I was down, I feel for those folks in Long Island because they're going to move, but the Rangers, you know, beat them the other night, and the Rangers looking terrific right now. But you know, long term, you got to like what the Islanders are doing.
It's funny how it goes. I was thinking about Chicago the other day, and if I'm not mistaken, back-to-back years, they got the third overall pick. They got Cam Barker.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, they got the seventh overall pick, and they got Jack Skilly.
Then
they get Taves and Kane in back-to-back years, and it seemed to make a little difference in their franchise.
Funny that, right?
I think getting Tavares, you know, the point I'm making is sometimes you pick three, and you don't always hit the home run in the Barker situation, but or the 6-7 position. But, you know, with when you get the franchise player like they did and what he's meant to that franchise, number one, committing long-term to them. I mean, Tavares is we knew it when he was coming out of junior that he was going to be a special player, and that's why Brian Burke said he was going to try to acquire him in that draft, if you recall. Good luck with that one. But anyway, I think you know, you get those franchise players and they can make a major difference over a period of time. And Tavares is that good and he's been that important. And he's helped Okposo and he's helped Josh Bailey and he's helped Anders Lee and he's helped numerous guys there.
In conversation with Sportsnet's Doug McLean. So last night, I'm going to talk about the Leafs later. I want to talk about the fun stuff. Last night, the Calgary Flames, another comeback. And I was talking to Shannon about this, John Shannon, in the first hour. Like this is almost a must see team right now. They're a lot of fun. They're literally never out of a game. How good a job has Bob Hartley done with this team?
Well, I think he's done a real good job, and we saw glimpses of it last year. You know, Bob had done a real good job in Colorado, but with an unbelievably talented team. He did an okay job in Atlanta with a bad team. Took some time off and went to Europe and worked in Zurich or wherever over there and came back and seemed to be a different guy. We saw glimpses of how hard they were going to work the second half of last year. And then this year it's taken off. And, you know, give credit to Todd Button, their amateur director of amateur. Mm-hmm. Give credit to Jay Feaster. I mean, they made some pretty good acquisitions. And what they have there, and you look at the start of the season, you say, okay, Hiller, going to be okay, goaltending. Brad Treliving brought him in this summer. And then you'd say, well, look at the top four blue liners in TJ Brody and Giordano and Chris Russell, former Blue Jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Weidman, you say, okay, pretty good back end. And you'd say, well, you know, up front, there, who's going to score other than Monahan and a couple of guys? Well, Johnny Gaudreau's just been a spectacular. It's funny, I talked to a longtime scout at the start of the season. Everybody was sort of jumping on the bandwagon of saying, how is a 5'6" guy, 150 pounds, going to play in the league? And this scout, well, it was Paul Henry who was a longtime NHL scout, said, Doug, I've watched this guy since he was 14. He's been an unbelievable winner everywhere he's been. And he said he's gonna be scary good. And I said, oh, okay, let's wait and see. Well, he's been scary good, guys. Has there been a guy come along? I mean, Pavel Bure, McGillney. We've had some guys that take you out of your seats. This little guy takes you out of your seats.
Yep.
I mean, it's bizarre. And mm-hmm. and he's that exciting. And you say must see. Then you got the big horse down the middle in Monahan that every team needs, loves to have to become a real good team. They got Sam Bennett coming. I mean, they're starting to position themselves. But going back to Hartley, Coburn, I mean, disaster here. Good, solid player there.
Mm-hmm.
Staging, you know, couldn't wait to move Meta here. Quality guy there. An important guy in their dressing room. A glue guy. Not a top six forward anymore, sometimes not even a top nine, but a glue guy. And you know, I think they've got a character group, and that's without even talking about Giordano, who's just been something special, you know. So
the curse will be when Leaf fans adopt him at the end of the season. That'll wipe this out, guaranteed, because it's tempting, right? Everybody's going to want to jump on and cheer for these guys. Do you think they can hang? They got 15 games, right? Do you think they can hang on for 15 games with minus Giordano?
I think it's good. You know, I still think it's going to be a challenge. I keep waiting for L.A. to make a move, and I look at L.A.'s schedule. It's really tough. I mean, is L.A. and San Jose going to miss, guys? I mean, I can't believe it. But
I can almost see San Jose missing, though, can't you?
No, I think, you know, after tonight, I think San Jose have four home games left the rest of the season. So
wow.
They're in really tough. They're in really tough. So I see San Jose missing. I really do. And, you know, I see L.A. battling with Winnipeg. And, you know, right now, Calgary are getting points. They're getting points. And, you know, people say, well, what's it like coaching halfway through the second period or third period in these three-point games? And what it is let's get the point. We can't afford to lose that one point in the last 10 minutes of the third period. Let's get our point and then take our chances in OT in the shootout. And that's what they've done. I mean, what they did in Ottawa after a long road trip to come back in that game, what they did last night, down 2-0 to Anaheim. I mean, how do you say they're going to go away? You just can't. I picked them. If I'm not mistaken, I probably picked them for 28th in the league.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, yeah. You and a bunch of people, right?
Yeah. And you know, I mean, felt comfortable doing it. And maybe I overlooked the character of the group.
Yeah, it's the best story in hockey this year. There's nothing even close to it.
Yeah. That's for sure. Well, Toronto is a pretty big group.
Well, that's okay. Thank you for the segue.
There you
yeah,
go. That's
okay. Let's do it. Let's go,
Doug. I said yesterday. I don't have any deep insight into Nazem Kadri. Don't know what's gone on. Don't know what precipitated this. All I know is when I say that a guy's going to be a healthy scratch for a game, and then we close the locker room, or we close the dressing room door, and he apologizes to me, and then he apologizes to the media, I think it's done. The last thing I expect is the next day, another guy, in this case, Brandon Shanahan, comes out and says, well, he's going to be a healthy scratch for at least the next two games. That just looks bad to me. Maybe I'm guilty of looking at this through rose-colored glasses. And again, I reinforce, I don't know what's up with Nazem Kadri. But man, when I've got a guy who's apologized privately and publicly, and then I kind of pile on, it looks really bad. It looks really bad from a logistics point of view.
I said on the air that when it happened, I said, okay, just a minute. A guy misses a practice because the time changes, and you give him a one-game suspension. And I'm saying, no, just a minute. What happens if you're a coach in that situation and a guy misses practice? There's 20 minutes late. You bring him in and say, okay, your clock was off. Okay, that's good. Get on the ice, and at the end of the practice, you're 20 minutes late. You're going to do an extra 20 minutes on the ice of a bag skate.
Right.
And you have a little fun with it, and you laugh about it, and you move it on. So when he gets a one-game suspension for being late, I'm saying, no, sorry, there's something else going on here. Mm-hmm. Don't tell me he's getting a game for that. I'm sorry, I'm not buying it, okay? And so you knew there was something else there. And to come out and say he's getting another couple of games, why not, if you make the original, why not just say, you know, we've decided we're going to stay with the same lineup. We want to see McWilliams. We want to see
exactly.
Smith. And then the next game, say, you know, we want to have another look at those guys. We're in a rebuild. We're going to have another look. We're going to keep the same lineup. Why even get into it? You know, we all have had major problems on teams we've been involved with. We've all had major discipline problems. And I saw Lindy and Jimmy Neal the other night in New York. You know, Cody Eakin is suspended for one game for disciplinary reasons. Why? We are dealing with that internally. Mm-hmm. End of story, done, over. Bottom line. So, you know what? You get emotional when you're heavily involved. You think, well, if I go to the media, I'm being up front. But when you stand up there and say, well, you know, there's deeper issues here, and, you know, then you're opening up a whole can of worms.
And, you know, the other thing too, Doug, and I know both you and Nick talked about this as well, but the thing is, what have we been saying? We've been saying, where's Brendan Shanahan? Where's Brendan Shanahan? Now he comes out and says this. And my first reaction is, wow, if this is enough to bring him out, this is really serious. There's something going on here. And I guarantee a lot of people had that same reaction. Guarantee you.
And I felt bad yesterday because I said, did he do it via video?
Yeah, you can't help yourself.
No, you can't.
No. But, you know, yeah, it's just... But you know what, guys? It's just been one of those years. You know, it's the assistant GMs, it's the assistant coaches. Then imagine if you're and I talked about this at noon today, imagine if you're the president of the hockey operations. You go to your board and you present your plan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Big deal, you present your plan, which we all have to do as GMs. Go to your ownership group, there's always a group. I mean, it's the owner and there's, you know, the minority guys, and you present your plan. The last thing you expect after you present your plan to your board is to read it in the Globe and Mail the next day. That's mm-hmm. the last thing you ever expect. And I think I go back to that and I'm thinking, wow. I mean, the team was in trouble before that. The team was scrambling. But, man, you got somebody on your board that walks out and tells what you just talked about.
And I think we know who it was.
And it causes you major aggravation for the next 3 months. Plus, you got a terrible team. But it's put so much pressure. I said it to Mark Osborne. How does Dion Phaneuf play with what he's had on his plate? Okay, he's struggled. He's not been very good. This is not letting anybody off the hook. But when you got all this on your plate, mm-hmm. it's damn hard to play. I'm sorry. It is. And I'm not letting anybody off the hook here, but it just is bizarre.
So do you
it's
think
on all year?
So Doug, do you think what Shanahan did was emotional or it was contrived? You know, because it's hard to, you know, imagine that a guy who hasn't spoken a ton this year to the media jumps out there in an emotional moment and says, okay, I'm going to do an availability and I'm going to hang this guy to dry publicly just because he was aggravated or because he was bugged about that story. And if it's contrived, you know, to send a message to him, you know, if a guy has, you know, there's all kinds of problems that can be dealt with behind the scenes if those are the issues, you know, and public shaming is a weird way to do it.
Yeah, I think it was inexperienced. That's what I think. The last guy I would expect to do that would be a former player.
Right.
Played 20 years in the league and has been through everything imaginable in a dressing room. And there's no value in it. I hate to say this, but I've made some NHLers cry in the dressing room in my office, you know? because they're emotional, I'm emotional, but it's behind closed doors and it's over, you know? These players are passionate guys. You know, there's no doubt Nazem has some issues. There's no doubt about that. And as I said, we've had all kinds of players with issues. And you've had to trade guys because of their issues. You've had to bench guys because of their issues. But you certainly, the last thing you want is it outside the room.
Yeah.
And if it leaks out, that's another story. That happens.
Hey, Doug, as someone who's coached teams and as someone who's been involved in the sport at a lot of levels, you know, it seems to me we're at the point now where I think in our mind we know who are the players that probably won't be back next year and the guys that are going to be back, et cetera, et cetera. But how concerned should we be? And when I say we, I'm talking about either whether it's people in the media or Leafs fans, whatever. How concerned should we be that, you know, the four or five or maybe even six guys in this dressing room that you do want back next year, and I'm talking about guys like Morgan Rielly, how concerned should we be that they're not going to be almost polluted by all this crap that's gone on here? And what do you do if you're a coach, Doug, or general manager or an executive, whatever? What do you do to prevent that from happening? Because, you know, there's a lot of negativity here.
Yeah, it's really, like, I watched, you know, we did the game last night, and I watched, you know, Gardner, he's lost. And
yes.
Morgan Rielly has played his tail off. He's a great young talent. He's starting to look lost. You know, you got the Kadri situation, who's another good young player. You know, issues or not, he's a good young player. And, yeah, you're concerned about it. But I think it changes when there's a new coach hired. And I think you've got to make an unbelievable decision here to get the best type of coach you can get. There's absolutely no way they can miss on this. This has got to be a home run. It's not going to be Babcock. I truly believe he stays in Detroit. I don't think there's any doubt. But they can't make a mistake on this next hire, because that will end a lot of it. That'll create some buzz. It'll create some new interest. I look at the job Willie Desjardins has done in Vancouver. He's kept things in the room. He's pulled the rights. You know, he's developed players. He's got his veterans pulling. They've played a gritty game that we haven't seen the Canucks play. So I think it's got to be a really, really the right decision. And I think that will look after itself with the Rielly's and them, because it's going to be a breath of fresh air.
Do you think that Brendan Shanahan's in for the long term? You know, the guy, I know it seems, you know, the guy that hired him has taken a powder. This situation has deteriorated. As you say, his master plan was public the day after he delivered it. You know, he's got one foot in New York still. Do you think he's going to stick around?
Well, I would certainly hope so. Is there a job that any hockey person would rather have than that job that he has? And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. There's lots of hockey people that are pretty envious that this guy walks in and gets this job. I mean, I happen to like Brendan. I don't know him very well. I know him well enough to talk to him. I'm not sure he still holds me in the same light, but that's fine. I would hope so. I would hope so. I can't see, you know, should he move to Toronto? Yeah, he should be here. This is, I know Bob went off in a rant about it, but come on. This is a 24/7 job, 365 days a year. If you're engaged, that's what it is. You live and breathe it, and you have to be in. You have to be here. You simply have to be here.
But I just wonder though, Doug. And again, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I don't know either.
But this is a guy. You know, the one thing I do have, you know, I suspect strongly is that if he wanted to go back and work for the league, Gary would be quite happy to have him back, because Gary's very loyal to him. He did, you know, for a bunch of reasons.
Yeah, and you know what? Brendan did some really good things with the league. I mean, we go back to the summit. We go back to the job he did in player safety. I thought he did a real good job. You know, he handled himself well in a tough job. I thought he did a good job.
So I just, you know, I just would think that sometimes in the, you know, in the middle of what he's in the middle of now, you would look at that and say, man, that was a reasonably simple job making those videos.
You know what? I remember, you know, and I chuckle about this often. I remember waking up, you know, in the morning, and it would be like you had blinders on that were 2 inches from your eyes, you know, with your hands over your eyes. You're thinking, oh my God, how am I going to get through this day? Between my owner, between the media, between the fans, between my team, how do I survive this day? It gets that bad, guys. I'm telling you, it gets that bad. It's a dream job. It's a great job, but you want to win so bad and you want to do the right thing so bad. And unfortunately, in the business, you make mistakes, and it is hard some days.
But is it hard, Doug? Is it still a dream job if you don't have Lewicki as the layer between you and the board?
For me, it'd be more of a dream job if I didn't have him.
I know, but okay, I get that. Yeah, but I understand what you're saying.
God bless you.
But you know what I mean. Your level, your insulation is gone now.
Here's the thing. You it's it, to me. it would be, okay, what price are you prepared to pay for this? You've got a young family. You know, everybody's comfortable. He's obviously done very well over his career, and he's had a great career. How much of a price do you want to pay for your family life and everything else? That becomes a big part of it. It really, really does. I mean, Jill and I laugh about it. I look back at 10 years and it was almost a blur. I'm thinking, did that really happen? Did those things happen in that 10-year period? You know, when I was in Columbus, it's bizarre how you missed out. So I think that's what the decision would be more than the pressure of the job.
Doug, as always, it was great to talk to you. Enjoyed our conversation. Glad to see that we're on the same page with Mr. Lewicki. Makes me feel good.
I dealt with him a lot before.
You take care.
See you guys.
It's Doug McLean of NHL and Sportsnet. I'm sorry. I have a particular bone to pick with Lewicki. I just think he's a song and dance man. Well, frankly,
and he's dancing out of town. So
he is dancing out of town, taking the plans for the parade route with him. Interesting to hear, though, a guy like Doug McLean, who, you know, as he said, has made NHL players cry. I mean, there's always all sorts of stuff that goes on in the dressing room that we're not familiar with. And but man, when you hear, and Doug's a hockey guy, and when you hear a hockey guy kind of wonder what exactly Brendan was doing there, that kind of concerns me.
We don't know, but what's going on here. But I can, you know, the one, I spent a lot of time with Jordan Tootoo over the last couple of years working on his book. And so I know a lot about, you know, and he had a lot of issues in Nashville, obviously, you know, which he's been very forthright about. He ended up in the substance program in the end and cleaned himself up and is having a great year in New Jersey right now. But, you know, David Poile ran that team and Barry Trotz. And they dealt with all kinds of stuff with Jordan, I can tell you. All kinds of stuff off the ice and within the dressing room, because his teammates knew what was going on with him. Some of them were part of it. Some of them were going, you know, doing it with him.
Yeah.
And none of that stuff went public.
Yeah.
There was never a moment where, you know, David Poile held a press conference in Nashville. I'm not sure anybody comes to hockey press conferences in Nashville anyway, but held a press conference and said, you know, this guy is going to be gone for 3 days for mysterious reasons, and you know, that did that kind of played it. It was always played out behind closed doors, and you know, that the problem is when you do it this way, there's not an easy way back. There's not an easy way back, and it's a very, very high risk strategy, and I'm not sure what the payoff is.
Well, here it is a couple of days after it, and we're talking about it, and people in the city are talking about it, and people in the city are you know, they're wondering, is there an issue here? Is it beyond simply sleeping in? It certainly hasn't disarmed the situation. And I'm a big fan of when you're the general manager, Stephen, of any team in any sport, in a big market. And I don't mean this to slag small markets, but when you're in a big media market, you have to disarm situations. You have to be. And that's one thing Ron Wilson could never do. And I thought Randy Carlyle was actually not that bad at it, disarming the situation, with the exception of the...
Wilson just liked to fight too much, right? He enjoyed it. He enjoyed the cut and thrust too much, and he's too sarcastic and too smart for his own good.
I think I realized this when Brendan Shanahan did this news conference. I mean, I was a person who always said I was tired of seeing Brian Burke front and center. I was tired of seeing Brian Burke front and center. But this almost called for somebody to try to... when I say this, I'm talking about the way this team has played for the last month and a half to 2 months. It's almost called for somebody to try to disarm it or just try to.
Well, it's pretty easy though, Jeff. All you have to do is say, as you know, Doug kind of alluded to it as well. So, you know, even if you hold him out of that first game, but you know, even that, you know, you make him a healthy scratch for two or three games, there'd be questions, there'd be speculation in the media, what's going on with Nazem Kadri? He's a healthy scratch. There's all kinds of things you can say and all kinds of weasel words you can use in front of the media to say, well, as Doug said, we're going to look at these other guys, or he had the flu, or there's any number of ways you can do that while managing the situation behind the scenes.
That's true, and especially with this team, because people will believe anything. You can say, you know what, we want to look at Brandon Cozen, whatever.
Boom. And if the situation is more serious, then there are also mechanisms for dealing with that.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure what this approach, what this one applies to. You know, this is it's kind of like, it's a bit of a hammer. It's either taking a hammer to a fly or it's, you know, taking a situation that is more serious than that and for some reason deciding to play it out in public when you don't have to. You know, maybe the tough love and the shaming is what they think he needs. But I don't, in this city, I would not play anything out under the spotlight unless I absolutely had to.
Well, and I was trying to think of next year. And, you know, this team, look, Nazem Kadri's not the perfect player by any stretch of the imagination, but
he's a useful guy. And look, there were times halfway through this season,
yes,
people say he was the best player on the team.
He's a useful guy. And the analytics guys will tell you he drives possession. And you know, I mean, the one thing I know from baseball is at some point we're all going to stop rolling our eyes at analytics guys. Because most of the stuff they talk about is going to be shown to be accurate. But I think that this guy clearly has value to the team. And now you're going into a summer where you've got to talk to him about a contract. And yeah, I don't know, man.
We had Chris Johnson on here halfway through the year. And, Chris is not a pure analytics guy by any means, but he's a guy who watches this team every game. And I remember Bob asking him, give me one good story. Give me a bright light story. What's the best story on the team this year? And he said Nazem Kadri.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the kind of the evolution of Nazem Kadri. So to go from that to this is, it's a big, well, again, I think they've just kind of put a big stumbling block in front of themselves, and they don't need any more.
No, it's
organizationally.
Yeah, again, this is, and the other thing that kind of surprised me a little bit here, Steve, is you've got a bunch of people, you've got people in Mark Hunter and Kyle Dubas who are used to dealing with young people because they ran junior hockey teams. I don't know. There's just something.
It's different, though. In junior, you own guys in juniors, like college, right?
Yeah.
They're all terrified. I guarantee you everybody was terrified of Hunter in London.
Mm-hmm.
They had, all hunters in London. So it's you kind of hold their destiny in your hands, and it's a different vibe.
If you were listening earlier, and I don't know why the hell you wouldn't be, you know that there has been kind of a, what'd you call it? Franchise movement, shall we say,
in the
American Hockey League and the Ontario Hockey League today in summation, the Hamilton Bulldogs. Steve, I'm going to let you walk me through this. The Hamilton Bulldogs are going to St. John's for a couple of years before they go to Laval.
Correct. The Montreal Canadiens AHL affiliate.
The Jets farm team is going to go to Winnipeg.
The Ice Caps go from St. John's to Winnipeg to play in the same building as the Jets.
That's right. And the future considerations in all this is that the Belleville Bulls were moved to Hamilton to play out of Cops Coliseum. So
which is not called Cops Coliseum anymore. It's called something else. Sorry about that. I'll get Scott too. I forget the corporate
name. That's right. That's why we're bringing Scott Radley of the Spectator on. Mr. Radley, how you doing? First of all, what's the name of the arena again? Because it's not like Brent and I both live in Hamilton. So
no, I was going to say it's nice to have the all Hamilton panel.
Yeah, it's about time.
The First Ontario Center is.
That's
the
it.
Name
that's right.
There you go. The First Ontario Center. All right.
Cops had a slightly better ring to it.
Yeah, it kind of does. I'm a bigger fan of names than corporate things. Scott, you know that community, that sports community, really well. Let me ask you: do you think junior hockey makes a go of it in Hamilton?
If you had asked people 15 years ago or maybe 10 years ago and they had those vivid memories of the Dukes of Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
which may have been the worst hockey franchise in the history of bad hockey franchises. If you recall, they actually hosted the Memorial Cup and had to pull out because they were so bad. You would have said no chance. The difference is, though, is that it is a different minor or a different junior hockey world today than it was last time Hamilton had a team. The national TV deal gives a lot more exposure. There are some really nice new arenas nearby here in Guelph and in St. Catharines for the Ice Dogs, so those franchises are healthy now. And frankly, the Hamilton Bulldogs as an AHL team were not tearing things up either on the ice or in the stands.
Mm-hmm.
And so to change it a little bit, to remove the idea in some people's minds here that you're developing players to go win somewhere else, which was the case here with Montreal. Great to see guys come through here who were going to be big-name players, but as soon as they became any good, they were gone. Now at least you're building to win here in Hamilton. I think that's going to be an appealing thing for a lot of people, that you're no longer just a way station, and that if you're going to build something, they're going to be here for some period of time and not as soon as they excel, they're just off on the road and you never see them again.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'd forgotten about the Dukes. I was trying to name all the junior teams that had been there, names of the junior teams.
It's better that way.
Yeah, I know, you're right. It's actually, but I'll tell you, and I'm the old elder statesman here, and I've watched more hockey teams in Hamilton than any of you guys have. And I'm convinced at this point, though, Scott, that the shadow of the National Hockey League, the failed, you know, the Ottawa Senators that should have been the Hamilton whatevers, the Jim Balsillie thing, that nothing can grow in that shadow hockey wise, really, in that city. And I'm not sure the issue with the Bulldogs was the players were passing through. It's pretty good hockey, good players. They've had successful teams. I just don't think it can happen there because people have never gotten over the fact that they think they should have an NHL team. What do you think?
I don't think you're wrong on the big issue there. Certainly, this is a market that has been teased with the NHL. Remember, the Pittsburgh Penguins are supposed to come here. Mm-hmm. And then the day after the Hamilton Bulldogs won the Calder Cup, we heard that the Nashville Predators were coming here. And then the Phoenix Coyotes went through that whole thing with mm-hmm. Jim Balsillie coming here. So on the big picture, you're not wrong. And when I was saying that I think the OHL can work here now, in no way am I talking about the fact that the First Ontario Centre is going to be full. I don't mean that by any stretch. It's way too big an arena to be the kind of success that people would have in mind with that. I'm looking at it more along the lines, I've talked to a number of OHL owners who give you an idea of what the numbers are you have to have in your building every night to be financially viable and stay as a team that can not be losing money and can stay in play. And that number seems to bounce around between 3,000 and 4,000 fans, and there's no realistic way in my mind that the Hamilton market for the OHL can't draw 3,500 or 4,000 fans mm-hmm. to OHL games. Again, that does not mean the arena is going to be a rockin', loaded, packed place with 17,000 people. I don't believe that either. And in the long run, this may be a situation that somewhere down the road, as First Ontario Centre becomes more and more antiquated, mm-hmm. and the possibility that even if in the 1 in a billion chance that the NHL ever did want to come here, we're now to the point where a new arena would have to be built anyway,
ooh.
You may reach a point where you say, all right, let's build something that's more OHL size, and if we have to add to it to make it an NHL arena, we'll do that later.
Wasn't
there
that
are still people here though that think if we get rid of Cops Coliseum or First Ontario Center, that NHL dream is gone. So they're so reluctant to do anything to look at a smaller arena.
Wasn't there talk of a smaller arena in Burlington at one point where people floating that around?
Yes, just recently. And now that wasn't, I'm not entirely sure how realistic that was. It was kind of a pipe dream that some people had started a website and said, let's look into this. There was no, that we know of, there was no actual money behind it. But certainly, as I said, when you look at Guelph, and I don't know if either of you guys have been to the Sleeman Center in Guelph or the new one in St. Catharines, they're fantastic arenas.
Yeah, the Guelph arena is spectacular.
They're both fantastic, and you look at that and you say, if there's some way that you could make that happen in this market, I mean, listen, the Bulldogs, AHL Bulldogs would have worked here if they'd had that kind of arena, but certainly the OHL would too. That is going to be the challenge. I think that they can financially, I think Michael Andlauer can financially make an OHL team work, especially since he's probably been losing money all along anyway, so it's not necessarily just a financial business for him. But to be able to get 3,500 or 4,000 people, if Hamilton can't bring that many people in on an average nightly basis, then there shouldn't be hockey here anyway.
So Andlauer stayed, and even though he's a minority owner in the Habs, right, of a small minority owner in the Habs, and had so there was an obvious connection with the Bulldogs, he's going to stick around with the junior team, correct?
Right. So he sold his share, he sold his affiliation with the Canadians, with their farm team, back to the Habs, and has now bought out the Bulldogs, the Bulls, I'm losing track myself here, bought out the Bulls from Belleville and is moving them here where they will become the Hamilton Bulldogs. And he maintains his small share in the Montreal Canadiens. And that was another one of the reasons why people didn't think, even with all these changes going on, that if the Bulldogs, AHL Bulldogs, left, that another AHL team would come in to replace them.
Right.
Because it becomes pretty cumbersome to have a guy who's part owner of one NHL team now paying and cheering for prospects for a different NHL team. Kind of had to be the OHL.
Scott, it was great of you to join us on what is a hectic day for you. Thanks so much.
No problem. Appreciate talking.
Scott Radley does a terrific job of the Hamilton Spectator. And again, the franchise shift, Mr. Brunt.
Yes.
As follows. Hamilton gets the Belleville Bulls.
Hamilton gets the Belleville Bulls. The Canadiens farm team goes to St. John's temporarily and then winds up in Laval. The St. John's and the Ice Caps, who are in St. John's, who are the Jets farm team, go to Winnipeg to play in the in the arena downtown there. So they have both teams in the same town, as do the Leafs, which again seems to be the style these days. And you can understand it's cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can watch them easier. The general manager can go from one place to another easier. So it, these AHL teams used to be kind of far flung. It didn't really remember. I think the LA Kings farm team was in Manchester at one point, right? Like it was, literally across the country.
Yes.
Things are changing.
Absolutely. Well, it's time. The man's going to join us. We're going to take a break. Evander Holyfield, really been looking forward to this. Evander Holyfield will join Stephen Brunt and myself when Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand.
Hey, welcome back to the stretch drive. I don't know, the 12th round, whatever you want to call it, for Primetime Sports for Thursday, March 12th. McCown will be back tomorrow. He will have a round table because it's Friday. It's Jeff Blair sitting in for McCown, joined by Stephen Brunt, and joined now, and it is a huge pleasure to say this, joined now by Evander Holyfield, former world heavyweight champion. There's a new documentary out called Champs, which is in select theaters starting tomorrow. And it centers around the lives of Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, and Bernard Hopkins when they were champions. Three terrific fighters and three fighters of a vintage that Mr. Brunt and myself know.
Well, Bernard's still going. So
Bernard's still going, yeah. Know very well. Evander, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
So who approached you about the documentary, and what was your initial reaction to it?
Well, my initial reaction was the fact of the matter when they were telling me about what they wanted to get the people to see,
mm-hmm.
and I thought about how my career started. I started for nothing, and I had a goal, and it was up to me to quit, and I didn't quit, and I was able to reach my goal, and I was able to reach my status by not quitting. And then, you have your ups and you have your downs because, you don't choose your parents, but, these are the parents that you came from. And you find out when you trust in God, like I do, and have faith, and you have some good people that come in, you have some bad people come in. And so, and I kind of felt that boxing is what allowed me to be the person who I am and allowed me to even have more faith than what the Word of God said because all the things that I've been through.
Vander, when you look back at your career, what's, for you, there's a lot of highlights, there were some tough moments as well, but what's the moment, what's your personal favorite moment? What's the thing you're most proud of in your boxing career?
Well, the perfect moment for me, making the Olympic team, representing the United States, it was wonder, and by being in the United States, too, by being in L.A., I just never, ever felt so appreciative, mm-hmm. And when they said, and fighting for USA, Evander Holyfield, I'm saying, that gave me chill bumps. And, anytime you fight, you always going to have somebody on the other side. But because the fight was in America, it's like everybody was on my side. I really felt like a hero.
Evander, you mentioned the Olympics, and it's interesting you picked that as a highlight because Stephen and I were talking yesterday about the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight and just how this is kind of rekindling an interest in boxing. And I remember one of the reasons that I followed boxing is I could watch guys like you in the Olympics, right? And then I follow your career. You became professionals. I could follow your career. And it almost seems as if people try to figure out why boxing isn't where it used to be, Evander. And I think a lot of it comes from the fact that the Olympic boxing isn't where it used to be.
You're absolutely right. And every time that I have an opportunity to talk about
what's wrong with boxing and United States, you know, I would tell them, I said, do y'all forget that Howard Cosell on ABC television used to always talk about the boxers, always talk about these kids could be doing something bad, but they chose to do something right to motivate people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was one of the kids at 14 years old seeing the Sphinx Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I seen both of them guys, and I realized that, you know, they wasn't highly educated, but both of them guys won gold medals in 1976, which is, and back then in 1976, if they won gold medal, if you went to McDonald's, you got one of the car with their name on, you got a Big Mac.
That's right.
So I was all excited about what the guys did and what medal they won. And so with the Space Brothers, it kind of represented my family, because, you know, we wasn't highly educated, but we worked hard. And both of those guys was able to get a gold medal, and that kind of gave me an opportunity to believe that I can get a gold medal as well.
Vander, you and Tyson are both part of this film. You guys are going to be linked in people's imaginations forever, I think, you know, for a couple of very, very memorable nights, and, you know, and also, you know, the time waiting for those fights to happen. Do you have any kind of, Mike's gone through an interesting journey. Do you have any kind of relationship with him at this stage?
Well, yeah, we do. I said, Mike and I, we very cordial, and, you know, and Mike and I, we kind of respect each other for who we are. You know, I can understand why sometimes he may not want to be around me. That's because the fact of the matter, you know, because it's the same thing that my mother told me. She said, son, don't ever pretend to be something that you really don't want to be, because people hold you there a little longer. And I realize that Mike is really not a bad guy, but he can be but he play a bad guy good. And they tend to try to continue to keep him as that bad guy, and he want to switch sometimes. I'm somebody in life, you know, you either on you're on the right side or the left side. You can't play that middle line. You get towed up too many times by both people.
Well, he was, I'll tell you, he was pretty convincing in that role, though, as your ear could attest.
Yeah.
Hey, Evander, before we let you run, I wish we had more time with you, but before we let you run, Mayweather, Pacquiao, a lot of people talking about that fight. Give me your vision of that fight. Give me what you think happens there.
Well, you know, both of them guys are tremendous fighters. And just like I've been telling people, I said, you know, I'm going to the fight. I'm going to the fight to see who's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because I truly believe they wouldn't be paying Mayweather $100 million if he could win that fight. And they wouldn't be paying Pacquiao $100 million if he could win the fight, because people don't know they pay more money. And I think that's what it's all up to the fighters, what they do that night at that time.
Evander, listen, it was really good to talk to you today. As I said, I wish we had more time. Wish we had another hour to talk to you. You be well, and we'll try to do this again.
All right, thank you.
It's Evander Holyfield. As always, the real deal. Champs, by the way, is available tomorrow on iTunes in video on demand. It's playing locally in Toronto at the Carlton Theater. That's kind of...
That'd be fun, yeah.
It's kind of goosebumpy.
Well, Evander's, you know, he's had a remarkable, remarkable run.
Yeah. You know? It's interesting that he and Tyson are still kind of... That's surprising me a bit.
Well, his take on Mike is right. That, yeah. You know, I'm not sure. You know, yeah, Mike can play a bad guy very well, and he can play all kinds of different characters very well when he had to.
Mr. Brunn, thank you very much for doing this today.
All right, see you in Florida.
See you in Florida. Mr. McCowan's back tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.